on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! It's
Bongo Bongo
with
Tim Ferguson
and Maynard. Tim, here we are, and let me tell you, it's just like chemical warfare has broken out here in the Frou Frou Cafe in Glebe Point Road. I will apologise only once for the background noise.
It's a pre-electric atmosphere here, Maynard.
Gas-powered.
Yeah, like gas-powered electricity.
You must be very excited because you are getting in the Doug Anthony's corporate jet and flying to Adelaide this weekend.
Oh, it's not a corporate jet if you own it.
Oh, it's a corporeal jet.
Well, that was why one of the seats was very wide. Yes, we're going to Adelaide. We're going to be in Adelaide doing a show Thursday, Friday. It's virtually sold out. Adelaide people are being allowed into the venue.
Previously, it was only people from outside a 50-kilometre radius, wasn't it?
If you were from Salisbury or Eucla, you were allowed in. The theatre has like a regulation, a guideline about letting in the locals.
We're talking more about that gig in a moment. We want to welcome you to episode 10, the show that has now crept up to 12,000 listeners, Tim.
12,000 people. And you listening are one of them. I mean, you're not one of them. I'm saying you're one of those 12,000.
Normally, we record our show right from the very front of the Frou Frou Cafe, but this time, due to wind, we're in the back.
It's working against me.
Do you see any independent filmmaker types? Of course, we will have the ear out for the motorbike. We might not hear it from the back, but do you see any independent filmmaker types here in the Glebe Frou Frou Cafe?
The Glebe Frou Frou Cafe is always full of screenwriter types, and you can see by the number of headbands that we're surrounded by a lot of screenwriters here today, all on Mac laptops.
Obviously, you can't see it, but there's a lot of head nodding, a lot of people stroking their chin and doing head nodding. Do you think that's, if you're head nodding, it's a deal breaker, or thinks the person is actually listening to you?
I think it's a little bit of both. They're listening to you, and you just happen to realise that the deal is broken.
Tim, what do you like as a dealer as far as it goes for entertainment purposes? I know as a dealer you're fantastic. I see people coming and going, getting our taxis, going into your place and leaving again. But when it comes to selling entertainment projects that you've had to do a few times, what is the way you go in there? Obviously, there's the Ferguson, my idea is fucking great, what are you on about attitude, but how do you get it across the line?
It's a 3-point plan, Maynard.
Oh, okay.
3, not 4, not 5, and not 27. Basically, to sell anything, you identify the pain or the need. So you say, headache? Oh, I've leapt to the product, which of course is step 2, which is Panadol is the answer. And step 3 is to increase the value of Panadol. So you say, headache? Try Panadol, now Panadol Rapid. And so you can't get Panadol Rapid from any other kind of Panadol-ish product. That way you go in with your show and you say, you need a show for 7 o'clock and you need an audience like this. This will do it. And not only that, it stars Megan Gale in work boots.
So now you know the key to getting a movie or a television project over the line, people. So just give us a little credit in the closing credits. Bunga Bunga did it for me.
It certainly did. I got Bunga Bunga'd and I've never looked back.
Listener, I can reveal to you now that I came into Tim Ferguson's flat, and as we know, he was trying to impress me with some classical music the other week, and he tried to pretend he was watching the Melbourne Cup, and in fact, he was watching the Prime Minister. But today I go in, and he's listening to the new Pink Floyd album.
The new Pink Floyd album, which is just like the old, just like the old Pink Floyd albums, except it's recent. That's right, it's got enormous amount of recentness.
What kind of mood did it put you in? Confused?
Confused, pensive, and introspective. That's Pink Floyd. Also, I think my parents are trying to build a wall between me and them. I mean, literally, I think they are.
What sort of material can we expect on stage this weekend in Adelaide?
Well, it's going to be pretty hard-hitting stuff. Adelaide needs to be taken into line. Adelaide is a city without order. You've got so much red wine slushing around. You've got so many psycho killers. someone has to put them into line. But the one thing I want to talk about is Adelaide's heteroness. They are so hetero in Adelaide. Even the gay guys are all hetero. The gay guys all hang around girls all the time and have a great old time. You know, and the girls love hanging around Adelaide gay guys. So I'm going to turn up and I'm going to say it's time to pick a team. For starters, you know, average Aussie blokes who say, oh, yeah, you know, gay men, they're effeminate. Well, I put it to those guys that there cannot be anything more masculine than grabbing another bloke and pummeling him in the Henry Winkler.
A lot of history.
Oh, a lot of history. They had the first out premier, Don Dunstan, who was a proudly gay man, and also the suburb of Salisbury. It's a well-known den. It's also why they have two AFL teams. So no matter who you barrack for, you can accuse yourself of playing for the other team.
Like you did in Brisbane, you go down a couple of days early to sort of acclimatise yourself, like when you put a goldfish into its new pond, you put it in the plastic bag, you let the water, you know, acclimatise. Is that what you're going down early for?
Yeah, we're going down early just to see the mood, Maynard, just to feel what the people of Adelaide are feeling. They're a bit punched up after the whole Snowtown crisis furor scandal, and so we just want to see...
Ooh, look, the Doug Anthonys are the soothing balm that they need to get over that.
That's why we want to see if it's still a raw nerve. Parts of Snowtown, why it happened, how it happened, and why someone made it into a movie that haven't yet been covered. And I think the Doug Anthonys can fix up that problem.
Of course, you've got Paul Livingstone there with you. And, of course, you and Paul McDermott are used to offending people, upsetting them, making them cry, people having arguments with their boyfriends and leaving the venue halfway during your show. You're used to that. Paul's a much nicer person, Mr. Livingstone. He doesn't like upsetting people. He's more of a surrealist. So how's he going with your offensive variety of comedy?
He doesn't listen to those bits. So when I start launching at the hetero men of Adelaide, he'll just tune out. And given that he's on a lot of OxyContin, which is hillbilly heroin, he just tunes out. And then when he gets prodded by Paul McDermott, he wakes up and he comes back.
You haven't lost him yet off the stage. Like, he hasn't, like, fallen asleep or just gone off to the side of the stage and not come back or had to be reminded to return.
Funnily enough, yes, we have. We were on in Canberra. And he said, I'll be back in a minute.
And in the middle of the show, he says, I'll be back in a minute.
And he just disappeared. Eventually, Paul McDermott had to go backstage to find out where he'd gone. So he was backstage, he disappeared, but then he said, I couldn't find the right moment to come back on.
That's the true story of what happened to Richard Feidler. He went off during one show and he still hasn't found that right moment.
No, he's still just enjoying the life in Brisbane and not really looking for the moment to come back on stage with the Doug Anthonys. It was all too easy to just walk off stage. So now we have specific instructions for Paul Livingstone. If you go off stage, you must still come back and stand within a line of sight and we will bring you back.
Is this because you guys not working together, he couldn't figure out the rhythm to get back? Is that it?
Also, we were riding a wave of filth at the time, and Paul Livingstone just didn't want to interrupt it or have much to do with it. He's more a confounding comedian, as his Flacco work shows. He likes to confound the audience and not actually make them feel sick with themselves.
Yeah, sort of confused to the point of amusement, not confused to the point of outright vomiting.
And having a long ride home with your spouse.
Is this the last one for a while? The Adelaide ones, and that's it for the year for the DAS, is it?
Yep, that'll be it. And then we're starting again in March in Sydney, I think at the Seymour Centre. Then we'll go do the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Then we're trying to get over to Edinburgh if we can get all our schedules together.
That's in September, is it next year?
Yeah, it's usually August, September. So we'll just barrel over there because there are people we love over in London and Edinburgh that we just really want to catch up with. And touring over there will pay for the trip. We're writing a new show because this isn't just a victory lap of the Doug Anthony All-Stars where we go around, make a bit of money, sell a few T-shirts and, you know, go home. This is actually...
Well, it does have that component.
Oh, it's always got the money component because, you know, a guy has to buy more toys. We've reformed the band is back together. We are writing new shows. It's our intention to come up with a show that is edgier and darker and scarier than anything else on the world circuit.
From what you've told me and from what I've seen so far, having missed all of your shows so far and in witnessing them from a distance, I think you're succeeding pretty well because you're really pushing the death angle, aren't you?
Oh, we're pushing death on this one, but the next show is going to be about the afterlife. So we killed you in the last show. What now? What are you going to do with these 76 virgins, you idiot? Once you've had sex with 76 people, you've got to spend the rest of eternity explaining to these people who were conservative enough to stay virginal.
So that's 76 really good stories you have to stick to.
Yeah, you've got to be able to say,
have your story really straight, 76 of them, and know which one's which.
Yeah, I was with Fatima, but we went to the drive-in and we read books. And it was very cold, so we were doing exercises in the car.
And we know that you're a bit in the atheist camp. We know that McDermott has certainly been affected for life about Catholicism. Where does Livo sit in this?
Who knows? Livo is an enigma. Livo probably speaks to God and gives orders. Paul Livingston is that kind of mind. He's, the man is a genius. So if I was God, I'd pay attention. You might find out something new. I got to say, I'm a bit disappointed about the Pope, and I would like to talk about that in my right of reply.
Anyone needs to be brought down a few pegs, it's the Pope.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go straight into the Bunga Bunga brown nosing segment. This is where we hijack someone else's halo of popularity and bring it to our own. I was recently a guest on those meddling millennials show, Splitting Cases, Tim.
It was an excellent program from you. You did wonderful stuff talking about the conflict between...
It was Can't Stop the Music versus Spice World. A difficult call and an intergenerational conflict as well, Tim.
Yeah, once again, they made the wrong one. These are guys who think that television was born shortly after they were born. I mean, I do love their show. They're very witty. They're very funny. But, you know, so are children. So are babies. Where you go, look, he's looking at me. He can tell I'm talking to him. Clearly, the village people have one very simple thing over the Spice Girls movie. In You Can't Stop the Music, you have all five of the gay guys in a bubbling spa bath with a beautiful woman in a bikini. That is a memory that is scorched on my mind.
Although they were scorched by the five Spice Girls being abducted by aliens in the movie. That's not something you see every day.
Yeah, well, actually it is if you live in Glebe.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I'll be siding with Spice World. I'll put that out there early. So I did watch many of the Spice Girls clips at the time because I guess I was growing up around that age. My sister, who's 13 months younger than me, was quite into them. So a lot of it was going on in the background.
Yeah, I really do love that millennial show. I think they're really terrific, and when their voices break, they're going to sound more and more like Alan Jones. So carry on, guys.
You've got to love a musical. And this is one big audio musical known as Bunga Bunga Show 10. We're in double figures, Tim.
We are in double figures.
I mean, how many TV shows had never made it to a 10th episode?
72.
Most shows after Batman that had Adam West in them, I think, would be your answer to that.
And everything Channel 10 has tried.
Well, one thing they haven't tried, because we're the champions of it, is crank mail. Let's open the crank mail.
Crank mail, crank mail, crank mail.
Gee, what do you think that is pissing this time, Tim?
I do think that that is Prime Minister Bob Hawke after an evening at Oxford, pissing into the punting Oxford River.
Punting. We asked a few interesting questions this week. I actually went out with you, Tim, to the very nearby local Glebe Library to talk to a few people about this, and people didn't have answers, although they got all nervous when I asked them about this question. If you were the Australian Prime Minister, what would be the scandal that brings you down? Or if you couldn't think of the, you know, the actual scandal, at least what would be the name of the scandal that would bring you down? Tim, what do we have on our Bunga Bunga Facebook page? That's Bunga Bunga Facebook. Check it out.
Fiona Whiteling says, I'd require all members of parliament to attend dressed up in Rocky Horror-inspired costumes.
Oh, come on, it'd just be a whole bunch of Brads.
A bunch of Brads. Felicity Snowflake, I do love that name.
That is good.
Said her scandal would be photoshopping Kim Kardashian's ass onto the opposition leader's head and accidentally clicking send to all.
Good one, Felicity.
Shane Neve says the scandal of choice would be being caught in an orgy with several aliens who were hidden under Parliament House and Gina Reinhart. Oh, who was hidden under a lump of coal. Johnny Worthington has a beauty here. His scandal, it comes out that Billie Jean was his lover and the kid is his. Kath Fryer, I do love Kath, having scandalous photographs of herself leaked in Star Wars cosplay dressed as Princess Leia. And I'm there, Kath. I mean, I'm there with that scandal. I'm going to buy that front page and I'm going to snip it out, put it on my fridge. Scott Pollard says it would be a scandal if he was being compassionate. Oh, good on you, Scott, hey? Why take it in the vein of humour in which it's intended? Kylie Johnston comes out of the gate. She says, would almost definitely be caught on film telling some idiot to go feck themselves, possibly while drunk. But Peter Nanny Pappas comes back and says, while drunk? Shit, I'd do that completely sober. Brianna Nichols and beautiful Adrian said, I did not have mud wrestling relationships with Vladimir Putin at the Playboy Mansion. Christy Llewellyn says, it sure wouldn't be overlooking 60,000 years of Indigenous Australian culture while making a speech at the G20. Go, Christy, hit them hard, hit them low.
Yeah, and of course, you would have been glued to the television all weekend watching the goings-on of the G20. I know this isn't a right of reply, but what was your response initially to our Prime Minister's performance there? And keeping in mind that John Howard has done it before.
Tony Abbott, I think it's, look, and it's not because I disagree with the man, you know, on just about everything, it's a fundamental fail. That speech he gave in front of the leaders of the world, not just the free world, but the unfree world and the expensive world, which was just complaining that he couldn't get a $7 co-payment from pensioners, did seem small and mean and ill-considered and, what's the word? Oh, yeah, just stupid. It was a missed opportunity that he and we will never get again, so fail. And, of course, Obama was so annoying, standing there with the head of China coming up with a climate change deal when all Tony could say was he'd gotten rid of a carbon tax. Awkward.
I know you don't like the man's policies, but if you had been him, what do you think he would have trumpeted as a world stage kind of thing that he could talk about?
I would have said we've got ahead of rock and try knocking that over. Also, we got Bondi. And have you seen Elle Macpherson? I mean, not the photos now, but wow, way back. She's so hot. Anything except whinging about the $7 co-payment would have been acceptable.
And the Chinese were going, gee, we could get people to do that pretty easily. What's your problem?
Yeah, exactly.
We can get people just to have one kid.
That's right. If we can get them to keep their filthy hands off themselves, surely a $7 co-payment would not be a problem for a dictatorship. Kim Jong-un didn't even come because, you know,
he was drinking port.
Yeah, he's got other stuff to do. And medicine, of course, because his tummy's all, you know, gone bung.
Kim Jong-un gone bung. There's an image there. Anyway, back to our crank mail, of course, when we're trying to find out what you would call your political scandal if you were the Prime Minister.
Alexander Spinks, real name, says my penis would probably fall out of my pants or something just because it hates me. And we've all been there, oh, Alexander. Right, yeah. We've all hated your penis.
Particularly when it falls down the leg hole of your undies.
Oh, gotcha. Brian Gryffindor, real name, said siphoning public funds into another Doug Anthony All-Stars Australian tour.
Perfectly reasonable.
Well, and of course, siphoning funds into a tour is always a good idea. Lawrence De B. Anderson says, I would make pancakes in my Speedos on the steps of the Opera House with my body It would be a scandal.
We got so many of these, we can't actually keep them all, but look, you know, we love the fact that you're throwing them in there. In fact, we never thought we'd have the problem of people giving us too many replies.
Wolfie Rankin says his political scandal would be actually organising an orgy in a brothel and a piss-up at a pub. And that would be a scandal in our parliament. There's someone who says they would start a debate over whether Star Wars is better than Star Trek, but that's just unfair on Star Trek people. But finally, the winner for this week is Daniel Egan, who suggests his first political scandal would be invading Poland.
Wow.
Considering it's such a, it's not exactly a border state to us. I mean, he just wouldn't even kick off with like Indonesia or anything. Straight to Europe and Eastern Europe at that.
And there's not much in Poland to invade. A couple of shops. There is a shoe store.
Is HMS Tobruk turning up? Because that would be our navy. And just opening the back door, a helicopter coming out and with a big thing that would roll down and go bang.
That's pretty well going to be it. I mean, Poland isn't even a tourist destination these days.
Have you actually written any crank mail this week? Because we get crank mail. Do you actually send much? I know you're really riding Tanya Plibersek pretty hard here on the letters front. You've sent her a few letters asking her about portfolios.
I have, and she hasn't sent me one. Big fan of Tanya Plibersek's work. And I assume she's going to be the leader of Australia for a short time.
You and I have even thrown the idea around of a Bunga Bunga special where we go to visit her office and we both interview her.
We will visit Tanya Plibersek and ask her important questions about fashion, about music, about how she does her hair and how many weeks she wants to be Prime Minister.
Because you know I'm a big supporter of the Socialist Alliance, but you won't let me talk to them, Tim.
The Socialist Alliance, firstly, aren't allied at all. Ask any of them, you know, where are the Spartacists? They're over there, don't talk to them. It's seriously the popular front of Judea when you go and talk to that mob.
Look, and we were cruising past the local Green member up the road the other day, his office, and you asked me to push a bit faster as we went past his place.
I don't want the vibe to be sucked out of me. I can feel the fun just draining out the bottom of my feet whenever I get near a Green. I love what they're trying to do to Australia, but there's a reason why they're hovering around 11% popularity for the last 20 years, and it's not because they bring fun to the whole thing.
I think we should open up our second crank mail question here. And again, we are in the Fru Fru Cafe. It's all sort of happening here. If you've ever wondered where it's happening right here, Tim.
It's happening right here. It's happening right here now in a spa bath.
The other question that we had for crank mail for this episode 10 of Bunga Bunga, I still can't believe I'm saying it. Episode 10, Tim. It only seems like yesterday that I was at your place and we were drunk doing the Christmas show.
Yes, the ABC tried to stop us. 2GB and 2UE have tried to stop us. And, of course, my mother has done everything she can to stop us. But we are going, and we are going fast.
I wish my former comrades all the best with the upcoming, things that are going to be happening at the ABC there. Tim, have you been out there checking out what's happening? You've got any inside running? Is there any show that you personally have selected to be removed?
The Prime Minister said he would make no cuts to the ABC, and so the ABC seemed to have invented all these cuts out of nowhere, because if the Prime Minister says it, we know it to be largely true most of the time if you see it from certain angles. So if people are about to be made redundant at the ABC, it might be because they're not interesting. I don't know what the story the ABC is pushing, but it's got nothing to do with funding cuts.
This is a question we put in our Bunga Bunga page, because the production was slightly delayed here in the Bunga Bunga 10 show, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very tense. We were very worried.
And
there was a lot on. Tell us what was on, Maynard.
Well, it was a little bit like working in the Leyland plant in England there during the 70s. It was a little bit, we thought we weren't quite sure. We had the most of the car, but the wheels hadn't arrived yet. But in fact, this is what was going on. Tim was getting ready to go to Adelaide, and I was getting ready to go to the psychiatrist. And I thought, use a part of your life for humour, Tim.
Oh, yeah. And if you can't get fun out of a psychiatrist, well, you're just not having fun.
So we ask this question. Tim is going to Adelaide. Maynard is going to the psychiatrist. What do these two things have in common? And you delivered in droves, listeners.
Jo Alabaster, who I think is our favourite woman here at Bunga Bunga.
She's pretty good, yep.
Jo says, I've laid on a couch, talked crap, and been given drugs in both Adelaide and in a shrink's office. Adelaide had a comfier couch and better drugs, frankly.
Must have been to North Adelaide and probably the Mars Bar.
No, that's just me doing an impersonation of what I was saying at the Mars Bar.
And what did Rebecca Edwards think that my psychiatrist and Adelaide had in common?
Rebecca says, crazy people, crazy people, crazy people. And she says it three times. C.J. Cross says both have people in places that ask you what's wrong and charge you through the nose for it.
Some of these people were deliberately going easier on Adelaide than they should have. Kim Gatians writes, neither place has a magazine newer than 1994. Ooh, that stings. She might have had the one that had you on the front cover of the Bulletin.
I think she does. That's when they stopped bringing magazines to Adelaide. Sue Wheeldon says, if you stay in Adelaide for too long, you'll need a psychiatrist. Carl Peace says Adelaide Uber Alles, which is very comforting.
Shell Lancaster going there for the obvious one again. Both places have psychiatric issues, shall we say.
Yvonne Clark, and I love this one, says the connection between psychiatrists and Adelaide is cats and caravans.
And our winner is Adam Remington asking the question, what do Adelaide and my psychiatrist have in common, Tim?
The psychiatrist picks your brain, and in Adelaide, a serial killer will brain you with a peck.
That's pretty good crank mail this month.
Oh, great crank mail. Thank you, everybody. Sorry we couldn't announce all of the crank mail. Keep it coming because it's giving Australia a giggle.
We are the show without a format, and I think we should at least show we have the format for crank mail by closing the crank mail right now.
Crank mail, crank mail, crank mail.
Well, after all that excitement, Tim, I think it's time once again to turn to our Batman singers.
Oh, I love the Batman singers. So far, we've heard songs about Catwoman, about the Batmobile.
About the Joker.
About the Joker.
And it's time for Robin. Were you a bit of a Robin fan, or do you think he got in the way?
I think Robin was just a Batman accessory. He was like a Hermes handbag. Expensive, pretty, but really you can't get that much into it.
Probably the universally reviled Batman movie of all time was The Batman and Robin. That's the one that most people hate.
I love that movie, though. A great line where Batman says, some days you can't get rid of a bomb.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Wherever Batman goes, he is always there. And all their evil foes are very much aware that though he's just a boy, no grown-up can compare with Robin, the wonderful boy wonder. If Batman's in a fix and it looks like it's the end, he really doesn't worry, he knows he can depend on that fearless teenage hero who is his closest friend, Robin, the wonderful boy wonder. He fights for law and order whenever there's disorder, and asks for no reward or prize for doing what he ordered. And though he's just a lad, I'm sure that you'll agree, there's never been a lad as wonderful as he. And if one wish I had, I wish that I could be Robin, the wonderful boy wonder. Wherever Batman goes, he is always there. And all their evil foes are very much aware that though he's just a boy, no grown-up can compare with Robin, the wonderful boy wonder. If Batman's in a fix and it looks like it's the end, he really doesn't worry, he knows he can depend on that fearless teenage hero who is his closest friend, Robin, the wonderful boy wonder.
He fights for law and order whenever there's disorder, and asks for no reward or prize for doing what he oughta.
And though he's just a lad, I'm sure that you'll agree, there's never been a lad as wonderful as he. And if one wish I had, I wish that I could be Robin, the wonderful boy wonder.
It makes you just want to put on tights and go fight crime, doesn't it, Tim?
I put on the tights, but I'm just scared of crime. Robin isn't.
It's time for Maynard's Bookworm Corner. Let's talk literature, Tim.
Let's talk, what was that word?
Literature. I got an email the other day as part of our crank mail program. Hey. From Norman Fox. And Norman said to me, Maynard, I'm writing a book. I'm writing a coming-of-age novel about people coming out in the late 80s, early 90s, set to the backdrop of the Horden Pavilion clubbing years. And I thought that's pretty interesting because no one's done that yet.
Nobody's done that, and it was such a vibrant culture, powered by thousands of people. I remember going to parties at the Horton Pavilion, and the place just being a sea of clenched-jawed, joyful people.
Well, I'm going to go to the actual scene of the original crime there with Norman fairly shortly, but I'd recommend, have a look. Norman Fox is his name, and the book's called Finding Ecstasy. I think it's .com.au. It's only available online. And see what you think of it there, because I think this could be the first of a wave of books set against this sort of thing.
What it should be, and of course they're all true stories, a young man discovering not only his sexuality, but himself finding his way through a very energetic and in some instances a very aggressive culture.
I spoke to Norman and he said that he realised that he was gay while I was DJing at the Horton Pavilion. He's the first person that's actually admitted that to me. I was playing ABBA's Gimme 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 at the time.
Yes, same thing happened to me, Maynard. But then you started playing Oils and I came back.
You, of course, went to a few of these parties with the Doug Anthony guys. Did you and Richard and did you wander off to these parties at all?
Oh, we wandered off. Paul McDermott would always just disappear onto the dance floor because he can dance and have a great time. Richard and I would...
So even when you were more mobile, you couldn't dance, could you, Tim?
No, I could. No, I don't miss dancing one iota. Richard and I would stand in a corner and shout about politics. We were agreeing with each other, but of course the music was so annoyingly loud.
Only you and Richard Feider would find the time to argue about politics at a dance party in the 90s.
Well, you can't stand around dancing. What the hell is that? I don't get off on endorphins. I have my own natural endorphins that are just on permanent alert.
We'll take it as a top tip here from the Bunga Bunga Bookworms Corner, Finding Ecstasy by Norman Fox. Have a read of it and see if, see if you could do as well.
Finding Ecstasy is a pretty good title for the book.
See, a lot of people are going to be emailing him with the wrong idea.
I would come up with a different title if it was my book, which would just be something like, I would just like a water, please.
It's time for Tim's Historical Hypothetical. The year is 1963. The place is Britain. The great train robbery has just been performed. You are Ronnie Biggs. But then suddenly it's 1965 and you've been in jail for 2 years and you've just escaped. Ronnie Biggs, where do you go?
Brazil, where hearts are entertaining June, we walk beneath... I would go to Brazil. I think that's where he went, because why wouldn't you? When you're on the run, like, you're not going to go to Poland, which I mentioned before. You're not going to...
Particularly 1965.
Yeah, you're not going to go to Suffolk. You're not going to go to Scotland, for God's sake. You're not going to go to Russia. You're not going to go to America. There are too many other criminals there and you might get hurt. So I would go to Brazil.
Mm. Did you like Ronnie's performance in Nevermind the Bollocks, the Sex Pistols film?
Yeah, it was a great performance.
God's like the Sex Pistols. They're a bunch of awesome blokes. They just like wearing filthy clothes.
I remember being scandalised. Wow, he's an actual criminal, and yet he's still at large. And he was very large on the cinema screen.
And he was on the beach, and they're going, where's the money, Ronnie? Where's the money?
He didn't say where the money was. I actually was connected to his great love, an Australian woman who lives in Melbourne still. They had a torrid love affair for a long time. It's quite a beautiful story, the bank robber and the Aussie girl.
He was here for a little while and he sort of wandered off. Then he went to Brazil. He dropped off at a few... Is there any places you think he should have gone that he missed out on the way across?
Well, Blaney, New South Wales... Blaney, New South Wales. If you're from Blaney, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not from Blaney, you'll have no idea. But Ronnie Biggs in Blaney, people would have known he was there, but Nobody really talks to each other in Blaney because that's a bit gay to talk.
Tim, I think we'll close the book on the historical hypothetical there. 1965 finds you in Brazil. Thank you.
Brazil.
It's time that you've been waiting for all week. There's time where you serve it up. This is a time where Tim Ferguson speaks truth to power. Tim Ferguson's right of reply. What's been sticking in your craw?
The Pope. I mean, normally I wouldn't go saying things against the Pope because he seems like a very kindly man. This Pope got everybody in the inner city in Glebe, everybody in Fru Fru Cafe on Glebe Point Road saying, wow, what a guy. Like, he says it's great that gay people can be gay, they're welcome in the church, people can be murderers, you know, that's okay.
I actually heard him described as the atheist's Pope. And what? Do people know what that means?
Yeah, atheists have to take a long, hard look at themselves. In fact, not too long, not too hard, because a lot of atheists really aren't much to look at, which is part of the reason why they don't trust God. The Pope, the nice Pope, the good guy Pope, came out this week and spoke out against, firstly, euthanasia. He then included in the discussion abortion. He then said that IVF, in vitro fertilization, that all three of these things were against God. And I don't think he meant that they were leaning against the God. He meant they were things God would frown upon. Now, euthanasia, I can see, is a, you know, it's a grey issue. Who wants to kill their great-great-nana just because she's worth $1 billion? But abortion, I think, is really a woman's choice and a mother's choice and should be left in the public sphere where a woman should be free to decide.
Well, it's a woman's health issue and it should be part of general medical care.
Well, it can be a health issue too, but sometimes it's a lifestyle issue. Sometimes it's because the woman is only 18 years old, for God's sake. But the third one, in vitro fertilization, it just seems absurd. Forget the fact that God invented whoever invented in vitro fertilization. Basically, the Pope will have to look in the face of everybody who's an IVF baby and say, you shouldn't exist. I mean, I love you. I love you. Come here. I love you. But you should not exist. You are a creature of the devil. It's nonsense. IVF, if it works for you, why wouldn't you go for it?
How's the Pope feel when he releases all those pigeons and so many of them that don't do so well?
Exactly, and some of those pigeons are IVF babies. So, bad Pope, bad Pope.
It's about time we were getting on our little unicycle and getting out of here. And
we really should leave because, you know, the tough screenwriters of Glebe are coming slowly moving forward, each one carrying their own MacBook.
Yes, it's like Dawn of the Dead, except people have script drafts with them that they want you to read.
Read my draft. It's about dinosaurs.
It's time for What's in Maynard's Bug Out Bag?
What's in Maynard's Bug Out Bag?
It's a CD, Tim.
Good Lord. Oh, you cannot be kidding me. It's the Cocktail Mix CD. This is, you know, ideal for every party.
Oh, look, and there have been a few parties had with this CD on too. It's a beauty there. Yeah, the Cocktail Mix Martini Madness is the name of the CD. No longer available.
No longer available. Who would have thought? The song I'm going to go for is from Anne Margaret, that wonderful actress, American actress of yesteryear, and it's called 13 Men.
It's set in a post-apocalyptic future where almost all the men have been killed and there are 13 men for every woman. And Anne Margaret is celebrating that fact here in that song, pretty much called 13 Men and Me. I've been Maynard.
And I've been Tim Ferguson.
Please join us on the Bunga Bunga Facebook page. You can drop us a line care of maynard@maynard.com.au. Tim Ferguson on Twitter.
I'm @withTimFerguson.
And I'm happening there on maynard.com.au. And we'll see you next time on Bunga Bunga 11. Please be part of it as we become well. Let's join. Let's make it 15 men with Anne Margaret, Tim.
15 men with Anne Margaret. She was a beautiful actress and she still is.
Cha-cha-cha.
Last night I was dreaming. I dreamed about the H-bomb. Where the bomb went off and I was caught. I was the only girl on the ground. There were 13 men.
the only girl in town. And as funny as it may be, the one and only girl in town was me. A 13 man and me, the only girl in town. I there were two men every morning, seeing that I was well fed. And believe you me, one sweetened my tea while the other one buttered my bread. Two men giving me oil wells, two men are giving me gold, and another sweet thing bought me a diamond ring about the 40 carats I have sold. 13 men and me, the only gal in town. There were 13 men and me, the only gal around. It was something I can't forget, 'cause I think of those 13 gentlemen yet. 13 men and me, the only gal around. Well, there were three guys dancing the mambo, three guys balling the jack, and all the rest really did their best. Boy, Shirley was a lively pack. Oh, 13 men and me, the only gal in town. There were 13 men and me, the only gal around. Though she won't tell you where she's been, 'cause it was just a dream, I hope I dream again. 13 men and me, the only gal around. Oh, there were 13 men.
On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!